welcome once again Susan Lindauer to Takes on the World.
I am so delighted to be back. I enjoyed our interview so much, and I think it's very important for your listeners to really understand the Patriot Act. Everyone thinks it involves fighting terrorism, but I was a whistleblower and an anti-war activist, and I was the second non-Arab American indicted on the Patriot Act, and we're going to tell you why today.
Well, I'm certainly looking forward to it. You know, when I read recently in the New York Times, buried in the New York Times, that the Obama administration is trying to get the Iraqi government to beg Washington for U.S. troops to stay past the end of 2011, and in the following days, I began to read statements by various Iraqi officials saying that the U.S. troops needed to remain to protect Iraq's fragile so-called democracy. I thought of what you had written in your book, Extreme Prejudice, and how that war could have and should have been prevented. And I'd like you to tell us about how that came about and or what your role was and how Iraq was actually willing to play and do whatever the United States wanted to prevent a war, and but those who wanted that war were hell-bent on making
sure.
It happen.
Sure. First of all, everybody, I was a U.S. intelligence asset who functioned as a back channel to dialogue, covert dialogue with Baghdad throughout the sanctions. I established contact with the Iraqi government in 1996, and I covered Iraq intensively for the next 7 years. My meetings were with senior ambassadors and senior diplomats, and I was motivated by a deep hatred of sanctions. And so the deaths and the suffering of the Iraqi people touched me very deeply, and so I was willing to act as a back channel, and the United States side knew what I was doing, and the Iraqi side knew what I was doing, and everybody wanted dialogue. And I think that's very important, because we've come to think that there's no purpose to even trying dialogue, and that's wrong. My book Extreme Prejudice reveals that there was a major peace option on the table that the public has never known about before. And in fact, I was arrested on the Patriot Act so that the government could reinvent the facts about pre-war intelligence. But in fact, Iraq offered the United States everything we dreamed of and more. They offered us cooperation with the war on terrorism, allowing the FBI to come into Baghdad, trying to hand over financial records on Al-Qaeda. They offered us major oil contracts. They tried to give the United States the Lukoil contract that had belonged to Russia. They offered major contracts on telecommunications, special preference contracts on any telecommunications, healthcare, hospital equipment, transportation in the post-sanctions period. Iraq had been destroyed by the sanctions, and so there was going to be this huge positive investment to rebuild the society. And instead of keeping the United States out of that reconstruction, Iraq said, please, we want to go back to the way things used to be before this whole conflict started, and let's bring the United States in, and you will have profits. We will get, together we will rebuild our society. And imagine if we were using Iraqi oil profits to share the wealth. Iraq offered to share the wealth, literally share the wealth, so that we would have jobs, we would have economic benefits from their reconstruction. And this was a very big deal. It was a strategic move on their part to make sure that the United States would be included. And so the story about pre-war intelligence has been a total fraud. And if you read my book, Extreme Prejudice, you're going to find the real facts of history. We did know about 9/11. I was told from April and May of 2001 onwards to threaten the Iraqis with war if 9/11 happened. And for 5 months, the CIA argued with the Bush administration, trying to get them to take some action that would help prevent 9/11 from occurring, and the Bush administration refused to do it. So all of this is in my book.
There were apparently warnings from also other countries that some attack was going to take place, and that it didn't come as a total surprise in Washington. In fact, the Project for New American Century, which a document made up largely by a group of pro-Israel neocons, saw the U.S. Spreading its power without any competition around the world, but in order for the U.S. to do that, the American public needed a Pearl Harbor-like experience. So I guess 9/11 was that Pearl Harbor-like experience.
Yes, yes. And the tragedy of it was that in the months before 9/11, the world community, the peace community, had done such a magnificent job. It had all crystallized together, and the sanctions against Iraq were falling. The writing was on the wall. Even the CIA was See, the thing is, intelligence, real intelligence, is brutally honest with itself. It doesn't play games. And I know that a lot of people a lot of your audience hate the CIA. I'm not going to argue with you about that, but in fact, the CIA recognized that the international loathing of sanctions was so deep that they were going to have to bend, they were going to have to get in front of the issue and take it back, and that's why they were willing to have the peace talks. These were covert peace talks, and it's fascinating. I think it's a fascinating story of how intelligence really has to operate in a practical setting, and it's very, everything you were told was a lie. The lies are much bigger than what you know.
Well, actually, to back that up, the so-called Dick Cheney set up a special department under Douglas Feith, a pro-Israel neocon, a special intelligence department, because they didn't like the intelligence they were getting from the CIA. And that intelligence department, Office of Special Plans, it was called, was the one that provided the intelligence, not the CIA, for what was supposedly happening in Iraq. And also the information that you talk about, where Saddam was supposed to have ties with al-Qaeda, when in fact, whatever else one want to say about Saddam Hussein, he was very secular Muslim and detested the fundamentalists, and mutually Osama bin Laden, I remember, had volunteered to send al-Qaeda to help liberate Kuwait when Iraq invaded Kuwait.
Absolutely, absolutely. And the United States had, before 9/11 ever happened, Iraq was one of the best sources on anti-terrorism that we had. Saddam's government was deathly afraid of Islamic jihadis abusing the sanctions, the breakdown of civil authority in the country to set up bases that would antagonize the people. You know, the people were impoverished from the sanctions, and he was very much afraid that these people would take advantage of the sanctions to bring down his government. And so he persecuted them mercilessly, and he was quick to report them whenever they did anything. And he recognized that anti-terrorism was something that was a value system that he could share with the West, and he played that hand aggressively. So that adds to the lie of terrorism policy. The things that you've been told about, you know, what a great leadership performance we've had on terrorism, we have lost opportunities for non-military action to prevent terrorism. Like, we've refused to take the financial documents on al-Qaeda from Saddam's government, which meant that the money stayed in play. And this was hundreds of millions of dollars from it turns out, from heroin trafficking, mostly out of Lebanon and Afghanistan. But the heroin profits are the funding mechanism for terrorism all over the world, and it's moving from place to, it's global, it's a global phenomena. And Saddam tried to give us documentation on that, which would have allowed us to kill two birds with one stone. We didn't have to kill a single American soldier to tackle al-Qaeda. We could have crippled them rapidly, and without going after Islamic charitable dollars. We never had to seize...
Hello?
I think the CIA is getting angry. The CIA is going beep, beep.
We can't hear it here, so that's what, at least we
can. Okay, yeah. I can hear it here. Okay. There's this loud beeping noise. Sorry.
Okay, keep going. You were saying about the Islamic charities have been under attack. This is interesting. I should say to our listeners, the first counterterrorism act was drafted by the people within the Israeli lobby. Malcolm Hohenlein, the executive director of the Conference of Presidents, American Jewish Organizations, bragged back in 1995 that he had helped craft with the FBI the first counterterrorism act effective death penalty act, which added 28 new death penalties, federal death penalties. But it was designed to stop charitable money going to Muslim organizations in Palestine and elsewhere in the Arab world, and they've largely succeeded.
Yes. This is Islamic dollar charitable donations for schools, hospitals, doctors, community programs, food programs for widows and orphans and the poor. And it's part of Islamic culture that they have a tithe. They call it zakat. And it's during Ramadan. And they give like 10% of their income to this. And it amounts to a huge sum of money. So the United States government has been going in and seizing these charitable donations and saying that if you give money to Islamic charities, you're funding terrorism. Well, that's ridiculous. The terrorism money comes from heroin trafficking out of the Baqa and out of Lebanon and out of Afghanistan. And we can approach terrorism with an entirely different model that does not require any military troops at all. And we can leave Islamic charitable donations alone and still cut down the Colombian drug cartels, because, in fact, the Colombian drug cartels are connected into this as well. So by changing the approach we could tackle a monster is what it is.
Well, actually, if we didn't have U.S. forces all around the world or U.S. forces supporting dictators, we might not have the problem of terrorism altogether. I mean,
there you go. Thank you.
I mean,
I agree with that statement too.
when our drones are killing civilians in Pakistan, when 78% of the Pakistani people, and that's in where they can take polls, are virulently anti-American. We continue to play the same games in Washington, and it's obviously in reading your book that there are people in Washington that want this conflict, these conflicts to exist. Saddam Hussein, as you pointed out, was an ally of the United States. He considered himself to be an ally. He was actually surprised that the U.S. objected to his invasion of Kuwait. And logically, and what you say in the book is really logic, realizing he was going to be under attack, possibly under attack, and the sanctions being hurting, obviously it was in Saddam's best interest to make a deal with the United States. But there are people in the United States who did not want any kind of deal. They wanted a war.
And you describe that. Yes, indeed. And the deal for the United States was gold. It was every single thing that we could think to ask for, Saddam's government immediately agreed to. There was no quibbling. It was like, what else do you want? Anything you can name, we will give you. We just want the sanctions to go away. You can profit. We will buy your cars. We'll buy a million, one. Think of the condition in the past 2 or 3 years of the U.S. automobile industry and realize that we could have been selling 1 million American-manufactured automobiles to the Iraqis, shipped overseas, built here, shipped overseas for 10 years. And when I laughed, I laughed at when they told me this. I laughed, and he said, "What? Do you want 20 years?"
Well, see, this is the kind of thing they obviously did not want revealed in the aftermath of the Iraq War, when they were talking about, well, they've never had a full investigation, which they obviously didn't want. So you had this information, and you were going around to Capitol Hill. Your second cousin was Andrew Card, who was a right-hand man to President Bush, and you notified him of all this information that you had, as well as Colin Powell, and you went on Capitol Hill, and what happened there?
A year before the invasion, as soon as we had a comprehensive peace framework, I took that all over Capitol Hill, sitting down with congressional staff, educating them about the peace framework and how this would work. Then, of course, we see the run-up to war, and Congress decides that they're going to reinvent the truth of pre-war intelligence. This is one of the greatest deceptions ever perpetrated against the American people. And I have to tell you, a lot of Democrats went along with it, but it was mostly the Republicans who were so dirty. Because I President Bush announced he was appointing a presidential commission on Iraqi pre-war intelligence to investigate what really happened, I contacted the offices of Senator John McCain and Senator Trent Lott requesting to testify. And I have to assure you that the FBI, thanks to the Patriot Act, the FBI captured these conversations on wiretaps from my home. So I can prove this actually happened. And some of the transcripts are in my book. And I told I told Senator Trent Lott and John McCain's office what the real facts of pre-war intelligence were. 30 days later, I wake up to hear pounding on my door, and the FBI is at my door with a warrant for my arrest on the Patriot Act, and I am accused of acting as an unregistered Iraqi agent. And they said that I had engaged in unlawful financial transactions with the Iraqi government. It turns out that I was accused of eating three lunches. I'm not making this up. Three lunches totaling $92.92, and that's lunches for two people. And then it turns out that the diplomat in question had a girlfriend named Susan, and he was having these three lunches occurred on dates that I could prove I was not even in New York City because I was home in Maryland, and so then the FBI tried to say that somebody snuck into my house and pretended to be me working on my computer, and it was just crazy. I mean, it was such a ridiculous allegation to begin with, and then when they were caught, instead of dropping the charges and saying, well, you know, this really is stupid to indict somebody for eating a cheeseburger, what they did was they turned around and said, Susan Lindauer is not fit for trial. Because really the whole purpose of the exercise was not to convict me, it was to shut me up. And it was to defame my reputation so that nobody would listen to what I had to say about pre-war intelligence and the 9/11 warnings and the aftermath of the 9/11 investigation. And all of that is covered in my book. But the Patriot Act, I was subjected to secret charges, secret evidence, secret grand jury testimony. I ended up getting locked up in prison on a Texas military base for a year without a trial and without a hearing. When I said I wanted a hearing, when I said I wanted a trial, they said, oh, she does not understand the gravity of the charges against her, so as long as she keeps demanding a trial, she's not fit to have one.
This reminds me of the Soviet Union, where people who were dissidents were considered psychiatric cases, and you have documentation and also support of your mental health for mental health professionals in the book. My guest is Susan Lindauer. We are talking about her book, Extreme Prejudice, which you can buy and get. And this book is self-published. It's a kind of book, 455 pages of information, and also it's a personal story that, you know, it's interesting. I don't do much interviews on personal stories, but your personal story is so tied in with the recent history of the United States that it makes fascinating reading and makes one realize we don't always know all the pictures in the puzzle. And a lot of missing pieces are in Susan's book. You could have that for $120 at $10 a month on Bill of the Month Club, 455 pages. It's a big book. It's a small phone book. It's exciting reading.
Well, it's heavily documented, too. It's heavily documented, and it shows how the Patriot Act works. We've been talking about the Iraq peace option, and we've been talking about the 9/11 warnings, but it also goes into the actual happenings of the 9/11 investigation and how things really played out, which is very different than everything you were told was a lie. And then you see the Patriot Act. The second half of the book is all about the Patriot Act, and it's about what happens to a defendant who is subjected to this and how quickly you lose control of very basic constitutional rights like the right to a trial. Things that you would never in your worst nightmare conceive could happen in the United States of America are the starting point of the Patriot Act. And you are not scared enough, because you're thinking the Patriot Act is only for those terrorists out there somewhere, far away. They're foreigners, right? My father told me, before I was arrested, my father told me that he didn't care about the Patriot Act because it was only going to get those Arabs. Those darn Arabs were going to get arrested, and they probably deserved it anyway. My father's a conservative Republican. And I was like, no, constitutional values must apply to all people living in the United States. And he said, no, they don't. And we had this huge dispute about it. Well, about 2 months later... my father gets a phone call from me, and I'm at the FBI headquarters in Baltimore, and I'm telling him that I've been arrested on the Patriot Act. And all of a sudden, you start to see that it's not those foreigners. It's not somebody else who's going to pay for this within this. It's us. This is a law that applies to us. And it's not, you know, I'm a white Germanic woman. I'm not Aryan. I won't say Aryan, but I am not. I am the quintessential good American lady. You see, we have made up a story that the Patriot Act is only for the bad guys, and we've got to see that the Patriot Act is hurting everybody. And I mean, I've had people come up to me and I say that, and it may sound a little embarrassing to you, but I've had people come up to me in grocery stores and drug stores saying, but they got you. They're not supposed to get you. And they're surprised.
Well, the truth of it is they were. What people have in question is how so quickly after 9/11 did they have this huge, I don't know how many pages, but it's a huge document, the Patriot Act, ready to be put before 7,000 pages put before Congress, so members of Congress who did not read it could not possibly have read it, voted for it, because in the wave of passion after 9/11, anything went, and so did American civil liberties. My guess is, yes. Susan Lindauer, her book is Extreme Prejudice, A Terrifying Story of the Patriot Act and the Cover-Ups of 9/11 and Iraq, The Ultimate Conspiracy to Silence Truth. We're going to start pitching here in a minute. This is the second time you've been on our program. How many other programs, radio stations, have called you to be interviewed?
Well, I will tell you that there are faithful group that have called me. But most Americans are still in the dark. About 95% of the Americans are still in the dark. The story is being censored by the mainstream media. Corporate media will not touch this at all. They are part of the problem. They've fed you a line about terrorism that gets them ratings, and they fed you a line about war that is totally wrong. And you're going to have to, you must have shows like this one in order to get any resemblance of the truth.
Well, Susan, I'm going to let you go. I'm going to have you back again. But I just want to thank you very much for being our guest. Your book, Extreme Prejudice, dear listeners, is something you will not be able to put down. 455 pages. Susan published it herself. This is something people can possibly do now that they couldn't do before, because mainstream publishers would have a problem dealing with the U.S. government if they tried to publish this.
Yes, that's true. We were told outright that the corporate media would be afraid to take on the government, and they would face trouble from the government if they published my story. And I just want to say one more thing, because I'm afraid that at the very end there I've sounded racist. Like, perhaps I think that American people should have better rights than other people. My point is not that is exactly the opposite. I hope you understood that. I am opposed to anything that takes rights away from anybody, and I do not believe that we should have one system of rights for one people and for somebody else. But the Patriot Act is something to be very frightened of, and a lot of people have made the mistake, like my father did, of saying, oh, it's only for them. It's not. It's for whistleblowers, activists. If you're speaking against the government, they are capable of doing all sorts of things to you now, and you need to know what's happening. Thank you.
Well, thank you, Susan Lindauer, for being our guest today on Takes on the World. Great talking to you, and watch your back. Take care. We'll
thank
talk
you
to you
very
soon.
Much.
Take care.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.